most people today think the world has lost its mind. People can't identify what gender they are, can't define what a woman is, and on top of all of it, we seem to hit a plateau of attitude that says, who cares? Well, we care, and have found a way to bring hope and definition back into this crazy world of ours. The Bible has always been an anchor for people who are adrift. And here on The Truth Barista, we are brewing up hope and making sense out of our disturbing times. The Truth Barista was designed for the everyday routine, encouraging your day with a cup of God's truth.
We're going to explore the incredible preparations for the third temple in Jerusalem, including the miracle of the red heifer and the Levites preparing for the third temple. We'll explore how the first stone of the third temple has already been prepared, and the great important questions: what happens to the temple, the end times, the return of Messiah?
You're listening to The Truth Barista Show. Don't go away. We're bringing you a fresh cup of God's truth to go.
Dr. J, here we are once again in the booth, and we're gonna put on our hard hats today, aren't we?
I mean, hard hats?
Yeah. You know, on a construction site, it's required you wear a hard hat in case something falls, you know, on your head from up above. So we're gonna walk around, and we're gonna pretend we're construction people, because we're gonna talk about construction, right?
Yes, we are going to talk about construction today, and this was actually kind of an interesting thing that we were talking about as we were reading through the Bible, and here we are in the Anointed Booth in the Erzatz Coffee Shop talking about Bible stuff, and it's a really interesting prophecy that you pointed out in Ezekiel 40 through 42, because it talks about a temple. A really magnificent temple. I mean, this thing is like huge, or as we would say, huge. And that is kind of interesting because there's no temple standing today. And you had questions about that.
Well, I did. And it's part of the, you know, Bible I don't always read, right? And when I read it, I don't understand it, so I gloss over it. Because why a temple? I mean, didn't Jesus do everything that the temple was to do? So why are we thinking about building a third temple? So that's what you're going to talk about, I believe.
Yes, that's exactly what I want to answer today, is why a third temple? Well, not just why, but how? And the most important one is going to be who? Who is going to build a third temple? And the reason this is important is because it's part of Scripture. Like we mentioned, Ezekiel 40 through 42 is fascinating because God is downloading. God himself is downloading to his prophet Ezekiel that even though the Jerusalem first temple had been destroyed, because Ezekiel's in the Babylonian exile, 586 BC, God is saying, guess what? Another temple will be built. Well, the second temple was rebuilt after the exile, but it didn't match the dimensions or the design of the one that God revealed to Ezekiel. And as I'll cover again, Herod took that second temple and expanded it and modified it and really made it a beautiful structure. It still didn't match Ezekiel's vision. So there's obviously a third temple that God himself has told his people will come. Well, that has raised all sorts of questions in the minds of both Jews and Christians around the world, especially since it seems to be tied with the end times. And so that's what I'm going to take you on a little walk through temple construction today. So I'm glad you have your hard head with you. I mean, your hard hat with you.
Thank you. I got a hard head too, but...
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, grab yourself a cup of Joe right there. Slide it right on over. Mm-hmm. And here we go. Now, what's really interesting is the first temple, as I was reading through in at the end of First Chronicles, King David, the father, speaks to his son, King Solomon, and he says to him, hey, Shlomo, I've brought together all the resources, and I got all the plans, and I got all this stuff. Now, God says I can't build the temple because I'm a man of blood, but I need a man of peace who's going to build this. So God has selected you. So now, as your father, I'm enabling you, my son, to build this first temple. So you get the plans, you get all these resources, and Solomon does it. In his reign, he completes this first temple, which evidently was quite magnificent to begin with. But because the people turned their backs on God through idolatry, in 586, that temple was destroyed by the attacking Babylonians, and the people were exiled to Babylon. Now, what's interesting during that time is Jeremiah and Ezekiel. Jeremiah was a prophet in Jerusalem. Ezekiel had been taken out of Judah and brought to Babylon in the first wave of exile. God downloads to both of them that that first temple was going to be destroyed. But God also downloaded to both of them that his people would one day return to the land and they will once again be transformed and build another temple. Okay, so we're in the exile in our minds right now. We're in this Babylonian exile. And now the Babylonians are conquered by the Medo-Persians. And the king of the Persians says, okay, all you Jews can go home. Just go home. And by the way, here's a bunch of stuff you can take with you because I want you to build the Lord's temple so that you can pray for me. Okay, so this is Nehemiah. This is Ezra. And they go back and they're prophesying and working on the area going, well, we need to build a new temple. And in 538 BC, a governor at that time named Zerubbabel, he was a leader of the tribe of Judah. He was part of the first wave of Jewish captives to return to Jerusalem. And the Persian king had appointed him as governor to work with all of the people that have returned to rebuild the temple. And he began to do it with the help of Joshua, the high priest. So you have this governor and you have this high priest overseeing the construction of the second temple. Now, it wasn't anything like the first temple as far as magnificent, but it worked, right? But over time, the next 500 years, it functioned. But then when Herod the Great came to the throne in, I think it was about 40 BC, he started work on the temple to build it bigger, larger, better, because he was kind of a megalomaniac anyway. That second temple was under construction and modification from 20 BC to AD 63. 83 years it took to make that Temple Mount area and the temple just all up to, I mean, it was, according to Josephus, it was stunningly beautiful. It was magnificent. However, because the people turned their backs on God. The Jewish leadership refused Jesus as the Messiah, and they refused the way that the kingdom was coming to them under the new covenant. Jesus prophesied and said, fine, since you rejected me, I'm going to reject you. I'm going to destroy this temple in 40 years. And that's what happened. In AD 70, that temple was destroyed under the legions of the Roman army, and the Temple Mount was left desolate. And so it's been that way ever since. Well, the usurper has come in called Islam and has built a mosque up there called the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which incorporates other small buildings within it, and that famous golden dome, the Dome of the Rock. And so that supposedly stands in the place of where the temple should be. So this is the sticking point. If the Dome of the Rock is there, if the Muslim Waqf, W-A-K-F, controls the Temple Mount, how are the Jews ever going to build a third temple? That's a really big quandary, because if they start building a temple, the entire world's going up in flames because Islam would go nuts. You can't possibly do that there, even though it's Israel's territory. Israel has allowed Islam to control it for the sake of peace. Well, how do you rectify this? And that's the question I want to bring up. Now, I notice you have a question, too.
The question is, can the temple, that third temple you're talking about, can that be built not necessarily on the Temple Mount, but alongside of it? I mean, could there be enough room to do that so you're not really replacing what's there by the Muslims, but you're building adjacent to it?
That is an excellent question, and there's a case to be made both ways. The Dome of the Rock is supposedly built on the rock upon which the Ark of the Covenant stood in the Holy of Holies. If that's the case, that would be really difficult because you'd have to destroy the Dome of the Rock and World War III would break out. However, there's a spot on the north side of the Temple Mount, directly in line with the Eastern Gate, which point, you know, which is the Kidron Valley Gate, where it's believed that's the place, the location of the Holy of Holies. If indeed that is the right location, a temple could be built right alongside the shrine, the Dome of the Rock. Now, the Dome of the Rock is not a mosque. It's a shrine. So the mosque is the place where they go to worship. The shrine is a place of devotion, a place to visit. In other words, it's kind of like, if you want to say it, the usurper religion's control point of the Temple Mount. But they don't control the north side of it. So it could go either way, sir. But it seems, according to Josephus, that the report is that you could look from the Mount of Olives to the east through the Eastern Gate and directly into the courtyard of the temple. That would put the temple on the north side of the Temple Mount. It could work.
One other question. I noticed that since 70 AD, Israel, they have not been able to do any sacrifices because there's no temple. Well,
right.
Between Temple 1 and Temple 2, the same condition happened, right? I mean, they've really had a problem with sacrificing for sin. I mean, they just didn't have the right mechanisms, right?
Right. Now, that's a very important point. But if you look in the rest of Scripture, you find out that sacrifices can be made, but all you need is an altar and a priesthood to make the sacrifices. You don't need a building.
Well, okay, that's a good point. So why aren't they doing it?
Ah, because if they were to do it today, there's so many rabbinic restrictions right now. If they were to do this on the Temple Mount, again, World War III would break out. In fact, there's a group called the Temple Mount Faithful who have been trying to do the Passover sacrifice on an altar that they can set up very, very quickly on the Temple Mount. They could do the lamb sacrifice and actually have an official Passover lamb ceremony that has not been done since 70 AD. But every time they try to get up on the Temple Mount, it's Israel's police that stops them because they realize if they set up this altar really quick and do a lamb sacrifice with an official priesthood, which, by the way, they have identified people as qualified priests, if they do that, boom, again, World War III would break out. So really all you need is an altar to do a sacrifice. So you don't really need the building. Now let me jump back here a little bit. Let's talk about this future third temple. Now, what's the reason? Why do we need it? Well, Ezekiel says it's going to come. We haven't seen in the previous two temples the design that Ezekiel has seen. Plus, when Ezekiel is talking about his temple in Ezekiel 40 through 42, it comes after the great wars of Gog and Magog and the regathering of all of Israel, all the Jews back to Israel. In fact, all the tribes would come back to the land of Israel. They will all be filled with the Spirit of the Lord. They will all have received the Messiah. So this now places the possibility of a third temple, not during the tribulation, but it's going to be in existence during what evangelicals call the millennial reign of Messiah. Okay, number two, Daniel predicts an end time where sacrifices have to stop, signaling the last days before God's kingdom is established on earth. Now, if you want to look these up later, it's Daniel 9, 27, 11, 31, and 12, 11. So these all talk about there's coming a time when sacrifices will be stopped on the Temple Mount. Now, Daniel was actually prophesying ahead to a man named Antiochus IV. In 167 BC, he was a Greek general, a king wannabe, who wanted to take control of that area. That meant taking control of the Temple Mount. He did stop the sacrifices. He set up an image to Zeus on the Temple Mount, defiled the Temple Mount, and demanded that the Jews worship him as God incarnate. His nickname was Antiochus Epiphanes, the manifestation of God. Now, Jesus, about 200 years later, on the Mount of Olives, in the Olivet Discourse, as it's called in Matthew 24, says, you know that thing that Daniel talked about that happened back there? Well, let me tell you guys, it's going to happen again. And it's going to happen the same along the same lines as it happened with Daniel, which means the sacrifices that are going on now are going to be stopped. That did happen in AD 70. So there are some theologians out there and Christians who say, aha, that was the fulfillment of that prophecy, this end time prophecy. The problem is, the end time prophecy has to do with Jesus' return, and Jesus didn't return in AD 70. So even though the second temple was destroyed, it was not the end time destruction of a temple or desolation of a temple that Jesus had prophesied. So that's still in the future. But here you go. Ezekiel, Daniel, and Jesus all talk about a place on the Temple Mount that's going to be defiled and sacrifices stopped. Reason number four, even Paul says it. Paul says that the Temple Mount will be defiled in 2 Thessalonians 2:3-4. So we have four witnesses that talk about a time at the end when sacrifices will be taking place, and they're somehow linked up with the temple, and we're not exactly sure where that is. Now, because of these Old Testament prophecies, there's a group called the Temple Institute in Jerusalem that have actually built the items for the temple when it's rebuilt. They're designing plans for it, and they're helping to train real Levites for priestly service. At the same time, you see the red heifers that are being produced and flown over to Israel. Why do you need red heifers? Because according to the law, the worst contamination you can have is by touching a dead body. Now, that's called corpse contamination. Because people have touched graves, walked over graves, priests are not purified to be able to run the sacrifices until a red heifer has been sacrificed, its ashes are placed in water, and they're sprinkled with this, if you want to call it, Jewish holy water. And then they're purified, and they can start their service. But all of these things are now in place. Okay, let's ask your question now about the sacrifices. Let's say you have an altar, you have a sanctified priesthood. Why would you need to do these sacrifices that Ezekiel is talking about? Because they're for sin and guilt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
But there are other sacrifices that don't have anything to do with sin and guilt. There's the grain offering, which is to thank God for his daily provision. There is the fellowship offering, which is a blood offering in which people bring an animal to be sacrificed, and then God gets some on the altar, the priests enjoy some of the meat, and the rest of the people have lunch in the temple courts, and they're basically having a church lunch or a synagogue lunch with God, just enjoying his presence. So you see, there are sacrifices that can be done. And who's to say that a sin and a guilt offering couldn't be done to commemorate what Jesus did? Not to remove sin, but to remember the one who did remove sin. It's a possibility. I'm just throwing it out there, you know? But what I have to fall back on is Ezekiel says all of these offerings will be done. So people go, I disagree. Well, fine, fight with God about that, because this is his word through his prophet. It's going to be done. Okay, so there's now a third temple option in our heads. When is it going to happen? Well, here we go. Matthew 24:15 says, so when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place. Holy place, we read into that and we think, oh, that must be the temple. The Temple Mount is set apart to God. Gentiles could only go so far, Jews could go farther, but the whole grounds up there was regarded as holy. Okay, so maybe that's not the temple, maybe that's the Temple Mount. Daniel 9:27, it talks about the abomination of desolation will be on a wing of the temple until the decreed destruction is poured out on the one who defiles it. In other words, the Antichrist. Well, wing of the temple there, I checked it out. The word is kanaf, meaning the sides. It doesn't mean in the temple. It could be alongside the temple or anywhere on the Temple Mount. That still qualifies. Okay, does there have to be a temple for a sacrificial system? No, all there needs to be is an altar. Then somebody says, well, what about 2 Thessalonians 2:3-4, where it says, don't let anyone deceive you in any way, for that day will not come until the falling away, the apostasy comes first, and the man of lawlessness, Torahlessness, is revealed, the man doomed to destruction, whom we know as the Antichrist. He opposes and exalts himself above every god or object of worship, so that he sits in God's temple, proclaiming that he himself is God. So people would jump on Paul and go, aha, see, Paul, right there. He says it's a temple. The Greek word there is naos. If you say the naos, you're talking about a temple, the official temple. If you says he sits in God's naos, it means there's a temple that's built. Or if you just use the word naos, it could be any pagan temple or shrine. If the Temple Mount is regarded as God's place of residence or house, it could be inferred that it doesn't have to have a temple. It means that this Antichrist is going to proclaim himself God somewhere on the Temple Mount, perhaps near the altar. We don't know. And I always fall back on, I'll let you know when we get there, okay? I'm not sure. So, they do have the Dome of the Rock up there. They do have the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Those are naoses, pagan temples. Okay, so, that's still a little fuzzy, so I'm going to let that hang out there to be academically fair. Now, do you want to hear something really magnificent that a friend pointed out to me? Here's your chance.
Well, what am I supposed to say? No, you've already given us so much information, my head is swimming. I'll play along. Okay, what is it?
We see, since I am the truth barista and this is my ersatz coffee shop, I would have overruled you anyway. Okay, so here we go. This is really fascinating. It comes from Zechariah 3 and Zechariah 6. Zechariah was prophesying at the time when Zerubbabel and Jehoshua, the high priest, were reconstructing the temple. This is temple number 2. And because people were getting a little bit discouraged about this whole thing, and I don't know if we can do it, it's not as good as Solomon's, you know, why is it just, it's kind of cheesy, and I don't know. Zechariah steps up with the fire of God, and he goes, no, get to the work at hand. Don't build your houses, build God's house. Then build your houses. This is how important it was. And this is what he says in Zechariah 3:8. He says, listen, High Priest Joshua, you and your colleagues sitting before you, indeed, these men are a sign, and he's talking about Joshua and the men, that I'm about to bring my servant, the branch. Now, this is very interesting. That phrase, the branch, is real similar to a sprout will come forth from the stump of Jesse. In other words, a king is coming who will come from Jesse's line after all the Judah kings have been eliminated with the exile. So this is a messianic term. So he's prophesying about a branch who is to come, who will be God's servant, who Joshua and the colleagues are a sign about. Get that? Joshua the high priest is a sign about the coming Messiah. Jump to chapter 6, starting at verse 9. The word of the Lord came to me, take an offering from the exiles from Heldai, Tobiah, Jediah, who have arrived from Babylon, and go that same day to the house of Josiah, son of Zephaniah. Take the silver and the gold and make a crown and place it on the head of Joshua, son of Jehozadak, the high priest. You are to tell him, this is what the Lord of armies says. Here is a man whose name is the branch. He will branch out from his place and build the Lord's temple. Well, yeah, Jehoshua, the high priest, was part of the group that was building the second temple. Verse 13, yes, he will build the Lord's temple, and he will bear royal splendor and will sit on his throne and rule. There will be a priest on his throne, and there will be peaceful counsel between the two of them, meaning the priesthood and the kingship. The crown will reside in the Lord's temple as a memorial to Heldai, Tobiah, Jediah, and Hen, son of Zephaniah. Verse 15, people who are far off will come and build the Lord's temple, and you will know that the Lord of armies has sent me to you. This will happen when you fully obey the Lord your God. Here it comes. Verse 11, make a crown. Verse 11, Joshua the son of Jehozadak in Hebrew is Yahashua ben Jehozadak, which means, in literally translated, Jehovah is salvation, the son of Jehovah who is righteous. If you put it in our biblical New Covenant language, Jesus, whose name is salvation, is the son of the righteous Jehovah. Boom. Now you know who the branch is. Now you know who the Messiah is. Verse 11, he is a crowned priest. This was shocking to Yahashua. Why? Because the priesthood and the kingship were separate and were supposed to stay separate. Uzziah, the king of Judah, tried to perform a priestly function of burning incense. God zotzed him with leprosy, which said, nope, you can't ever come into the temple again because you violated that, you crossed that line, okay? They're supposed to be separate. But somehow in the future, God is making this prophetic sign of crowning Yahashua back in Second Temple days, saying that in days to come, there will be a high priest who will also serve as Israel's king, and that will be the branch, the Messiah, whom we know as Jesus. Are you tracking with me so far?
So far, yeah. It's pretty cool.
Okay. Now, back in ancient days, the elder son, this is before the tribes of Israel, the elder son served as a high priest in the house in training and the ruler of the house in training until the father died. Then when the father dies, the son takes the reins of priesthood and rulership over the family, and then he gets the firstborn status. Well, as we track through the Bible, you find out Joseph of the tribes of Israel became the eldest firstborn son. The priesthood goes to Levi, another tribe, another brother, another tribe. And the kingship goes to Judah, another brother, another tribe. And it stays separated. But in Jesus, what happens? He's the eldest firstborn son of the Father. He becomes the high priest. At his death, when Caiaphas tears his robes, and Jesus, the sinless one on earth, the only sinless one on earth, the best qualified, becomes the high priest. And then he is now ruling and reigning from his father's right hand. All three of those things come back together and reunite in Jesus. Jesus, the branch, is the fulfillment of Zechariah 6. What does it say about him? This man will build the Lord's temple, verses 12 through 13. Indeed, Joshua and Zerubbabel, high priest and governor, they did build the second temple. But remember, this is a prophecy, a picture, a live-action picture of what's going to come at the end as a fulfillment of prophecy. I believe this points that Jesus will be the one who builds the third temple. Now, how can Jesus build the third temple if he's up in heaven while the tribulation is going on earth? Huh. Well, there's not then a temple during the tribulation, but there can be an altar. There is a holy place called the Temple Mount, so all of those things could work out. When Jesus returns, now he can build the temple that also becomes his palace, his throne room. And in fact, the temple is known as the throne room of God, the Holy of Holies. So this is amazing. The rulership of Israel combines with the priesthood of Israel in one building, or maybe two buildings connected, on the Temple Mount from which Jesus will rule and reign. It's probably going to happen during the millennium. At least that's what Zechariah seems to say. You have a question, sir?
Well, I think the timing is always a little squishy, because you're saying that Jesus is going to build this temple, this third temple, and it has to be later than when the Antichrist is in control, right? Because yep. He gets destroyed and everything. So, and he ends up coming into the temple or on the Temple Mount, as you're saying, and is, asked to be worshipped. I mean, he demands to be worshipped. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that all has to happen before Jesus arrives, right?
That's right. Okay. Now, this is why I'm not dogmatic about end times teachings. I'll let you know when I get there, because it doesn't seem clear enough to explain that. But when it actually happens, we'll be able to say, like Peter did on the day of Pentecost, oh, this is that which the prophets prophesied. So as we get closer to it, I think it'll get more clear. But on the other hand, we won't know until it actually happens. But this is the final thing I want to say on verse 15. People from around the world will assist in that temple's construction if it follows the rest of the prophecy in Zechariah 6. There you go. At least that's
what I think.
Well, it's a great teaching, Dr. J. I love it. I have one question, because I'm always asking the question, why, as believers, and we believe in the entire Bible, right? Old and new.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's one book. Why aren't we in the church more aware of the things that you just said? Now, there may be a faction of people that would be a little bit more along your line, but the majority of us have no clue. And you know something? We don't care.
Yeah. Well, and I think the reason is there's a misunderstanding in the church. Actually, there's a veil over the eyes of the Jews as to Jesus being the Messiah, and that's coming down in our days. More and more Jews are coming to faith in Jesus. I think there's an equal veil over the eyes of the church, because for 2,000 years, we thought we were, you know, all that in a bag of chips, right? That God has transferred everything to the church and has turned his back on Israel and the Jews. No, as you can see in scriptures, Israel and the Jewish people are still central to God's prophetic plan. In fact, prophecies about Israel being the head of the nations has not been fulfilled yet. And so because, number one, ignorance of the Old Testament, ignorance of prophecy, ignorance of the Jewish context of the scripture, and this belief that the church has replaced Jews and the nation of Israel, all four of those things really contribute to this ignorance and lack of understanding of these scriptures. When you start digging in, the layers start opening up, and then parts begin to fit together much better. But again, it's not perfect, and I won't know until we get there. But the glory of it is, Jesus is coming back. He will wrap it up. There will be a third temple somewhere, because Ezekiel says so, and because God the Father inspired the prophets to say it, it's going to happen.
Amen. Well, Dr. J, this has been great. If someone's listening going, huh? You know, huh? Where do they go where they can get more information about you and perhaps this theme and other themes? Where do they go to understand more?
Go to highbeamministry.com. That's our website. Highbeamministry.com is in car high beams. And you go there and you can find podcasts. We have over 450 podcasts that are available, numerous blogs, books, all sorts of really incredible information for you. And hey, if you have a question, email me at highbeamministry@gmail.com. Highbeamministry@gmail.com. And I'll do my best to answer your questions. But once again, as we approach the end, keep your eyes on the Temple Mount.
Hello, Mauricio. Today is a special day on the Truth Barista. Why? Well, I don't know. I have a slight case of losing things. Memory is one of them. But I remember it will be special. Thanks for joining us.
The Truth Barista is a listener-supported ministry that depends on the gifts of listeners like you. Please consider a gift to this Christ-honoring ministry today. If you're listening online, go to highbeamministry.com. That is highbeamministry.com. While you're on the website, check out all the ministry resources that are available. The blog, the Cruisin' Through the Bible commentary series, online classes, and don't forget to subscribe. We want to keep you informed about all the new series that we create for radio and the podcasts. Remember, we like feedback, so send us an email at highbeamministry.com. The Truth Barista, teaching God's Word as truth for faith and practice. Join us again next week for a cup of God's truth on The Truth Barista.